Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractor's Business Tape CD of the Month. This monthly cassette CD series represents yet another step in accomplishing Granting Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. This month's speaker, Donnie Gandy, is an author, speaker, and facilitator with over 35 years of experience. In June 2001, Simon & Schuster published Gandy's first book, 30 Days to a Happy Employee, How a Simple Program of Acknowledgement Can Build Trust and Loyalty at Work. Donnie was also the regional director for the Franklin Covey Company in Dallas for 6 years. At that renowned company, Donnie worked with organizations in the integration and implementation of programs and services based on Dr. Stephen R. Covey's principles, made famous by his best-selling book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Donnie is a native Texan with a BA in communications from Baylor University. She currently resides in Allen, Texas. Today, Donnie is going to share some vital information on leadership with a presentation entitled, Leadership is Taking Charge of Yourself.
Hi, my name is Dottie Gandy, and I welcome the opportunity to share with you some insights on the subject of leadership, a topic on which there is certainly no shortage of information. Hopefully, our time together will be new and refreshing simply because the approach I want to take with you is somewhat different. And for that reason, I have titled this presentation, Leadership is Taking Charge of Yourself. You see, many in business operate under the sometimes limiting and inaccurate belief that leadership is a designation. It's to be awarded based on rank, tenure, title, or even favorable circumstances. Experience, however, tells us that every position in the organization, from entry level to the executive suite, has components that require leadership initiative in order to be successful. It is the absence of recognizing and acting on this knowledge that limits the success of some who believe themselves to be leaders and inhibits the unleashing of creative talents for those who do not even have this awareness. Although many have offered a wide variety of definitions of what it means to be a leader, the definition I like best is this: a leader is someone who has followers, which prompts an interesting question, and that is, if you view yourself a leader, who's following you? Stop and think about that for a minute. If you're a senior executive, a boss, a manager, even a parent, it is normal to have people, otherwise known as direct reports or kids, follow you, or at least they are influenced by you. Others of you are parents whose children hopefully follow your instructions or guidance. There are still others we follow because they are teachers or instructors, and our learning is dependent on paying attention to what they tell us. All of these examples of people we follow because of their rank, title, tenure, or experience. Some of them we might even agree to follow regardless of our relationship with them. But for the most part, there's something at stake for us in following them, such as a promotion, a passing grade, an increase in our allowance, or whatever. The critical question then to ask ourselves is this: if you were stripped of your rank, title, or tenure, would people still follow you? Or put more personally, who is following you? And how come? Many of us can identify people that we could say in all fairness do follow us. However, if we didn't have rank or title or tenure, would they still follow us? we can be fairly certain our children will follow us as long as they are living under our roof. Absent that relationship, however, would they still choose to follow our advice? And what about people in our work life or in the classroom? Would they still follow us if we were not the boss or the teacher? I believe there are people who follow us because they have to, and then there are those who follow us independent of our rank or title or tenure. In other words, they are inspired rather than forced to follow us. So the answer to the question, who's following you, and I'm talking about the kinds of followers who are inspired by you, can be found, I believe, in the demonstration of four key qualities. These qualities, when learned and practiced, inspire people to follow us, regardless of the nature of our relationship with them. Let's look at each of these four qualities from the perspective of how well they are currently operating in our lives. My belief is that when these qualities are present in us, people are truly inspired by our leadership. The first quality of an inspirational leader is this: they prize the seed more than the bouquet. It's kind of an odd statement, but think about it for a moment. If someone were to offer you your choice of a beautiful bouquet, either literally or metaphorically, or a package of seeds, most of us would be tempted to take the bouquet. In the moment, it clearly seems the better choice. Great leaders, however, take great pride in, quote, growing their own, unquote. They are patient and intentional about what they have to offer, and they don't keep pulling up the flowers to see how the roots are doing. Another way of saying this is captured in the familiar saying, give a man a fish and you feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish and you feed him for a lifetime. You know, Abraham Lincoln could have been showered with bouquets if he had acquiesced to the demands of slaveholders. But he chose instead to plant the seeds of freedom for everyone. And in so doing, I believe he became a leader for all time. Frequently, perhaps too frequently in corporate America, we see how tempting it is to take the bouquet and run. Companies like Enron are a great example of what happens when greed in the moment overrides the patience and planning that comes with creating a successful and lasting business. A question to ask yourself then is this: when you look at your own life, what are the opportunities you faced to take the bouquet and run? When this temptation happens, what is the cost? Think about a time when someone saw in you the seeds of possibility when you could not begin to see it in yourself. How did it feel to be on the receiving end of someone else's trust and belief in you as far as their vision was for your future? Although a seedling in your own eyes, you were a bouquet in training in theirs. And now think about a time when you saw in another person their potential and interacted with them accordingly. As parents, it is almost instinctive for us to carefully nourish the seeds of greatness that our children later become, whether as business successes, great parents, or just good, decent human beings. Prizing the seed more than the bouquet. Indeed, it is a quality that inspires others to follow you. The second quality I would ask you to consider is that of boldness. Now, I'm not talking about taking foolish risks, acting irresponsibly, or behaving in some sort of off-the-charts manner. Rather, I'm talking about the boldness that results in more creativity, more possibilities. JFK was considered almost beyond bold when he suggested in the 60s that we could put a man on the moon by the end of the decade. We all know now that he beat that promise by 2 years. We also have breakthroughs today in medical science that would not have happened without the bold visions of researchers. The 3M company is building artificial body parts, including such things as artificial brains or veins that give a renewed quality of life, indeed life itself, to those who otherwise would not have had it. A question to ponder around this quality of boldness is this: what would you dare to say or do or attempt if you were only 10% bolder than you are now? Would you be more proactive in talking with your teenager about drugs? Would you make a suggestion that could turn a failing project around at work? Would you tell the truth about a troubling matter at work or at home? What would the outcome likely be? And more importantly, what is it costing you not to be 10% bolder? I remember working for a Fortune 500 company in the 80s where a constant water cooler conversation was about a senior corporate officer whose bad breath was creating problems for the company and for his career. It would seem a simple thing to bring this matter to his attention, but no one was willing to tackle the powerful elephant in the living room. Fearing that I was probably risking both my own career and his ire, I pulled him aside one day and talked about the impact of the problem on his career, the company, and those around him. He was stunned upon hearing the news, having been completely unaware of the problem. When he consulted a doctor, it turns out there was a mild virus in his system resulting in the halitosis. He was profoundly grateful for what to me was an exceedingly bold, even fearful conversation to have. As a result, however, we remain great friends today, and his career has soared. So again, I would ask you the question, what is it costing you not to be 10% bolder in your life? The third key quality is that of seeking and accepting responsibility. Another way of saying this is that when others view your behavior, what they're looking for is results, not reasons. People who step up to the plate and accept full responsibility for their actions are admired by those around them. When historians were comparing the presidencies of Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy, they noticed an interesting fact. They cited as the low point in the Kennedy administration the Bay of Pigs invasion, a terrible disaster. These same historians, however, said that the high point in Kennedy's administration came the following day when he went on national television and accepted full responsibility for the failed invasion. He insisted that the blame did not lie at the feet of the military, the Pentagon, or any cabinet official. Rather, he said, "I am accountable for the failure of that decision." Historians say he cemented his place in history with that action alone. This was contrasted with Nixon and the Watergate scandal. Historians said it was not the Watergate break-in that resulted in the downfall of Richard Nixon. It was the cover-up, causing him eventually to be impeached as President of the United States. C. seeking and accepting responsibility for our actions is a quality in sometimes short supply in corporate America. But it is always alive and well in the heart and mind of any individual who accepts fully his or her responsibility for the results they produce, both good and regrettable. The last quality I want to offer is, in my mind, the most important of the four, and it is this. We are inspired to follow people who intentionally and consistently acknowledge those around them, who make them feel valued for their contributions. Business statistics have told us for years that the main reason an employee voluntarily leaves a job is because he or she did not feel valued for their contributions. When these same business surveys ask employees to rank in order the 10 things they most wanted from their employers, more appreciation was listed as number one. When researching this topic for a book I later wrote, I found out that when people feel valued for what they offer, productivity increases, morale and loyalty go up, and absenteeism and turnover decline. Conversely, when employees do not feel valued for their contributions, performance declines, morale and loyalty decrease, and turnover and absenteeism increase. It is a simple task to demonstrate the impact on the bottom line of any organization when employees do or do not feel valued for their contributions. With all of this data, an interesting question is, when this data is so readily available, why don't more companies do a better job of acknowledging the contributions of those around them? And I'm not talking about allocating a larger part of the budget to reward and recognition programs. These programs have their place, but these initiatives generally reward only the highest achievers or performers and occur annually or quarterly at best. I'm talking about the kind of acknowledgement that sounds more like this. You know, Joan, I know these are difficult times in our industry, and we're asking you to practically do the jobs of two people. Yet you show up every day in a good mood, competently doing what's required. I want you to know I appreciate that. It means a lot to the company to have people like you around. I promise you this kind of regular acknowledgement produces the kind of long-term sustainable results that any business is seeking. A good example of the impact of acknowledgement in the workplace can be viewed with a company called Southwest Airlines. Now, after 9/11, one of the things that business started to track was what happened to the top 10 airlines in the 3 years since that disaster. Interestingly enough, here's what the results showed us. Only one airline out of all the 10 top airlines has continually maintained a profit every quarter since 9/11. Only one airline out of the top 10 has not announced layoffs. Only one airline out of the top 10 has announced an expansion of routes and the purchase of additional equipment. And the only airline out of the top 10 to consistently rank as either one or two and meeting customer demands is Southwest Airlines, just as it was Southwest who was the airline referred to in all of the previous answers. Now, I don't think there's a coincidence between the rankings that Southwest Airlines receives in its industry with its stellar performance and the acknowledgement it is famous for giving the people who work for them. I remember taking a Southwest airline flight from Houston to Dallas. Now, this was a 6 p.m. rush hour flight. We were very crowded on the plane. The flight took about 45 minutes, and it was all the flight attendants could do during that brief amount of time to give us a sack of peanuts and a drink. I was sitting on the aisle and could hear two flight attendants who were passing each other have this conversation. You know, Carol, who's taking care of the back of the plane, this is only her fourth day as a flight attendant for Southwest Airlines. Let's do everything we can to support her success. The other flight attendant quickly agreed, and they walked on by, leaving me to ponder when was the last time in any job that I had held that on day four of that job, people who I did not even know were colluding behind my back for my success. Well, I was still trying to come up with an answer to that question when the plane landed in Dallas, and the lead flight attendant, in making the announcements about tray tables and seat backs, concluded by saying this, "Ladies and gentlemen, Carol, who's been taking care of you in the back of the plane, this is only her fourth day as a flight attendant for Southwest Airlines. We think she's doing a wonderful job. What do you guys think?" Now, those of you who, like me, have been on many Southwest Airlines flights will know what happened. The passengers started applauding, cheering, stomping their feet, and whistling. And so again, I had to ask myself, never mind when was the last time on day four of a job that people I didn't know were colluding behind my back for my success, but whenever in any job did everything around me spontaneously stop for the sole purpose of saying, "Well done." This is the kind of relationship of acknowledgement that will keep a company in the black and setting records and keep their employees profoundly happy. One of my favorite stories that illustrates this point is about a man named Charles Plum. He was a naval commander, a highly decorated Navy aviator, graduated at the top of his class at the Naval Academy, and was a co-founder of the Top Gun School. During the Vietnam-era war, he flew jets off the aircraft carrier USS Kitty Hawk. After 75 successful combat missions and 5 days before his tour of duty was to be completed, his plane was shot down by a surface-to-air missile. Although he parachuted to safety, he had landed in enemy territory, where he was captured and spent almost 5 years in solitary confinement in a North Vietnamese prison. Charles Plum was one of the fortunate prisoners to survive that experience, and following his release, he went around the country giving talks and speeches about his experiences as a POW. Following one of these talks, he and his wife were having dinner in a restaurant one evening when they were approached by a young man who paused and then said to Plum, "I know who you are. You're Charles Plum. You flew fighters off Kitty Hawk, and you were shot down and spent almost 5 years in a Hanoi prison." Plum was a bit taken aback and said to the young man, "Certainly I know all of that, but how would you know this?" The young man replied, "I was the seaman who packed your parachute that day." Plum was dumbfounded and said he couldn't sleep that night, thinking about how many times on the deck of that carrier he had passed this young man and did not even acknowledge his presence. Because, you see, Plum was an officer and a fighter pilot, and this young man was just an enlisted seaman. And yet it was this young seaman's willingness to show up every day and do a routine job well that of packing parachutes, that saved Plum's life. When Plum resumed his speaking events, he always began with the question, "Who's packing your parachute?" This is a good question with which to summarize what we've been talking about on this tape. If a leader is someone who has followers, who indeed is following you? It's a good bet that people are inspired to follow and be influenced by you if, one, you prize the seed more than the bouquet, if, two, you are bold, for as Goethe the philosopher said, there is genius in boldness, or, three, you seek and accept responsibility, and finally, you intentionally and consistently acknowledge those around you. I invite you to consider the level and extent to which these attributes are present in you. The answer lies in looking over your shoulder to see who's following you. Be the kind of person that people are not forced to follow, but rather are inspired to follow. Thank you.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Feel free to give us a call with your comments, or if you prefer, you may fax or email our office. As a reminder, our 3-day Basic Business Bootcamp continues to take the industry by storm. For more information on ProfitMax and or our bootcamps, simply call or write Grandy & Associates. Also, be sure to check out our totally redesigned website. The address is www.grandyassociates.com. The address is the same as in the past, but is totally new in terms of its contents. You can now order online, view bootcamp locations, and even sign up for a class online. Take a look as you have time. It might just increase your bottom line profit a bit. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.